Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we are here until the hour of 6. That's from 4 o'clock. Now, I know that I started with a wee, but that's because I do that every day. And now it's become pretty much muscle memory at this point. But today is just you and I. Now, and we're going to gossip the South African province of Gauteng, and in particular Joburg. But we're just going to talk about Gauteng at large, because earlier this month, they hosted an investment conference. This is something that the an initiative coming out of that particular provincial government, and they started last year their inaugural Gauteng investment conference. You know, Gauteng investment conference was held. The first one, the inaugural one, was held last year again in. It was held in April, on the 3rd of April. They did talk about a lot of investments, of course, since the one that was held this year was the second one. Of course, you know, there's a little bit of reflection with regards to, okay, how much of what we discussed in the previous conference, how much of the investments that were pledged did we get, how much initiatives that were discussed in the previous conference did we implement. Now, that's basically what's going to be dominating today's Home Run, and that's from now until the hour of 6. And wherever you tuned in from, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for picking Eagle FM this time of the day, your drive time show, and that is until the hour of 6. Speaking of drive, I know the long weekend is, basically here already. So just watch the road and drive safe. Arrive alive. You can arrive late. You can choose to arrive late or arrive the late. I would go with the first one if I were you, because that second one is not good for anyone. Now, so but plus, if you you know, if you arrive the late, and then you are not. It's kind of difficult for you to listen anymore, because, well, now, I don't know anything about the afterlife, heaven, hell, whatever you want to, you know, whatever you want to call it. But I'm, you know, as thrilling as it would be for me to find out that they have an Eagle FM app somewhere in hell, heaven, and people are listening, it would be nice. But the thing is, we're not sure of that. So just let's try as much as possible to stay this side of life. You know, let's say to the before life, and make sure that if we cross over to the afterlife, it's something that is beyond our control, not something that was preventable, like drinking and driving, and driving like you live in a vacuum, because a lot of things can go wrong at any time with you, the car, the road, anything. So, well, just keep the speed in the range that you can be able to control. Yeah. Now that we have that out of the way, let's come back to the investment aspect of things. Investment is one subject that is very difficult to have, not just for the South Africans. It's basically for the entire African continent. And that's because I still maintain we are having this discussion backwards. We're having this discussion backwards, and that's something that the South African deputy president Paul Mashatile pointed out. That it's fascinating, and this was pointed out during the Gauteng conference 2026. What he highlighted, of course, the usual that we or more often hear, irrespective of which African country is talking about. He's talking about development. Especially economic development, innovation, and all those things. It all boils down to one thing. Natural resources. We have a lot of it, and we ship all of it in raw form. If we were to diversify our economies all across the African continent to, away from the extractive industry, then we'd be having a different conversation. But as of now, the African economy is heavily reliant on an industry that is not controlled by Africa, and that's the extractive industry. And that's part of the problem, because we can talk as much as we can about development, but we are not addressing the elephant in the room. Develop using what? Well, I'm all for miracles. I mean, we are praying for miracles, you know, and all that. But here's the thing. Isn't it amazing that we have the most churches and we pray the most and we are the least developed? You don't see the irony in that? No, I'm not trashing prayer and religious beliefs. I am a fairly religious guy myself. But I certainly believe that effort and prayer goes along. Because if you just run to the forefront with prayer and leave efforts behind, yeah, I don't see how that's going to work out. Because if prayer really worked without effort, I think I would have a lot of rich friends and rich relatives. Heck, I would be born from one of the richest families on the planet. Except it doesn't. It's effort. Like, have efforts on the side. Like, nothing beats effort. Actually, that's how I'd structure it too if I were God, because the last thing I want is to raise couch potatoes. That will just be, you know, gaining weight, sitting on the couch saying, "Lord, boy, I'm out of food now. Please just throw in a miracle for my fridge to be full." I gave you muscles, brains to think, blood flow, energy, and all those things. Now you want me to go out there and utilize that energy. If I was God, that's what I'd be telling you. Now, something that Paul Mashatile pointed out was that we are, you know, and of course he's talking about South Africa on this one, and he's basically pointing out that South Africa itself is very has interconnected trade with countries outside of Africa than it has connections in terms of trade with the inside African countries, basically with African countries. And that's when I was like, oh, that is true. That's true for every African country. We do more trade with outside African countries than we do with each other. And when the deputy president of South Africa pointed that out, I started to think, okay, why is this though? And well, guess what? It's not rocket science. I just came back to the obvious. When we say we trade more with countries outside of Africa, ask yourself, what do we trade on? What do we trade with them? Mostly agricultural produce, and we are talking about we're talking about caramel. But I think Kenya produces a lot of that, and there's one that I keep forgetting that Madagascar dominates, and you have Ivory Coast and Ghana dominates the chocolate industry. So if you now if you ask me, you can just look at these three. You can just look at these three agriculture produce. You can just look at these three agriculture produce. And take cocoa, which is the primary ingredient. Take cocoa is the primary ingredient in your chocolate. And most of it is shipped in its raw form. And on caramel, I think Kenya produces a significant part of that, but Kenya produces I think a significant part of that, and with China and the US playing a significant part of that market, and vanilla is Madagascar produces a lot of it, except all this, you know, you can look at it from diamond, gold, caramel, vanilla. You are looking at the extractive industry and agriculture produce. Most of it is shipped in its raw form out of the continent, shipping jobs along with them.
At ShopRite, we've got everything you need for baby and more at the lowest prices. Save big on baby essentials like 36, 42, 45, 50, 58 or 68 Pampers disposable nappies for only 209 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And Jolly Tots baby walker, all variants for only 299 Namibian dollars 99 each. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save big on deals for baby. Only available until 3 May 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust always.
Fikama, katuka uyekenda dadakura. Ta ShopRite's big low price carnival. Oko kuna enda dadakura. No shoyo, ekupivoroshi mariwa. Kwakurila, mona oilandi fomangashi. E milita, omathera heali. No mirongo nanoto. Homegrown cooking oil blend. Eriavari, dorandashike. Yedora, omirongo hamano. Ochoyo, eritera dirimbari to brox oros squash concentrate. Dirimo, domaruja yoroka. Otoranda, kendo mirongo natu. Nahamano, nesenda. Omirongo wei nungwei, esheimwe. Enda tueti. Otinongu chupio, omafiko mlongo amei. Odura oyo twei. Oko ShopRite. Abuke, Ashike, Otokara Una, Omitoyoku Findana po Kamwe Pamutoroli, Omavera Valino Mio Monano, Wa Trolley Dashes, Landa Shike Shimwe, Shomwe Tapo, Ivita Tuoyota Yufa Ombinga, Ufindane, Na ShopRite Big Low Price Carnival, Omafia Vanoa, Otakuru Mama Fukwaya Juni, Odura OFA, Emangonomarandra Vano, Otakashikurua.
Welcome back from that break. So if we are going to trade with each other, what are we trading? And of course, there are a lot of factors that are very obvious in terms of trade, like foreign currency. Any reasonable business person, including yours truly here, if I was running a business and I was given two market potentials that I can get into, like, you know what, we have done all the research, and we found that there are two markets that you can get in where your product will sell just like that. Now, we have one that's in foreign currency where you are looking at massive return on investment, which is what the EU and the US are. And then you have one very politically unstable with a bunch of guys running trigger happy mostly in the central part and the eastern, northeastern and northwestern, basically the entire Sahel region. Where would you want to sell your products? Of course, every rational business person would opt for a place that is politically stable, one, and two, it has, foreign currency as an advantage and a lot of buying power. You see, it turns out the best way to solve a problem, an economic problem, is step one, be in control of your money. Because if you miss that, then you can just, you can daydream. Now, this is what Paul Mashatile said. Africa remains resource rich, but value chain poor. You may not like the guy for some reason. I'm pretty sure every Namibian has one or two South Africans they don't agree with on pretty much everything. But this statement made me go, may not like the guy, but he's right. Africa remains resource rich, but value chain poor. We export raw materials and import finished goods. We are connected to global markets, yet insufficiently integrated within our own continent. Now, that was a very nice statement, a very nice one. Let's start over that statement now, shall we? Africa remains resource rich, but remains value chain poor. We export raw materials and import finished goods. We are connected to global markets, yet insufficiently integrated within our own continent. And then he goes on a dreaming spree. Now, if you ask me, the continental The African continent, the African continent's continental free trade area gives us a platform to change this, to build a regional value chain. Let's just say we were to, right now, cordon off the entire African continent. White people, relax. We will also lock you in here. That's if you have a nationality of whatever particular country you find yourself in. Now, if we were to cordon off this whole continent, which one of us would buy uranium from who? Which one of us would buy gold from who and for what? Which one of us would buy diamonds from who and for what? Which one of us would buy cocoa beans from who? And, which one of us would buy Ivory Coast and Ghana's cocoa beans to produce chocolate the same way that the Swiss does? And that brings us to the next part of the missing part of the puzzle. The infrastructure. So we have more international connection than we do local connection. And when I say connection, please, for the love of God, don't think corruption. Thank you very much. Now that we have that out of the way, I would now point out yes, the resource is going out of the continent. But these are the resources we're supposed to use to, because processing them will require building industries. Those industries will those industries would require workers. You see where I'm going with this? That equals employment creation. And here is African politician 101. I mean, the whole idea of we will create employment is the dumbest point any politician can make right now. Because if you look at the extractive industry and you see how much natural resources is leaving the continent unprocessed. Unprocessed means, it still has a lot of employment value. The processing, that's where the employment is. So that means, we should replace the shipment of raw natural resources to shipment of employment, because that's exactly what we're doing. When you are shipping unprocessed natural resources, you are shipping employment. And then we turn around and face our people with a straight face. I like to point that out, with a straight face, and say, you know what? We just shipped tons of employment to China, Russia, the US, the EU, but don't worry, we will create employment. I'm sorry, honorable, whatever the heck you are. How? And the problem is a lot of Africans, we listen more to fancy English than we do to the point that's being made by the speaker. So we just, before the statement is even finished, we are already, just listen to that English. This man must be telling the truth. Some of the biggest liars speak English. I mean, for the love of God, the British colonized you guys in English. That means they lied to us in English and colonized us in English. That means fluent English speakers can also lie. You're welcome. Now, let's say, even if you step away from the extractive, from the extractive industry, and let's just look at agricultural produce. Caramel is increasingly used as a source of protein for human living in the arid and semi-arid regions of northern Kenya. The caramel population in some parts of the country increased by 78% between 1982 to 2010, a period when cattle in the region increased also well 10%. So Kenya produces a whole lot of caramel. How many processing plants do we have on this continent that will basically process that into a protein? I never actually knew that, because I know that, gym enthusiasts take a lot of protein. I wonder, now, for those of you that are gym enthusiasts, when you read the ingredients on those giant protein powders that you gobble up, there's caramel somewhere in there as an ingredient, right? just like it is, you know, it's you know, cake. Now, and when you go to Madagascar, one thing that you find is, for Madagascar is vanilla. Madagascar dominates the vanilla industry. Ivory Coast and Ghana dominates the chocolate industry. And when I say a point of correction, the raw material part of the entire value chain, the entire supply chain, we just produce it off the ground and put it on a ship. Off it goes to Switzerland. And then some of it obviously ends up in Italy where, you know, they produce your Ferrero Rocher. Have you seen how much is one of those boxes? It's about 300 something for about, is it 12 or 18 or how many of those? I don't remember when last time, but there was a time I was romantic, believe me. And then I just threw in a towel because, it turns out, well, nah. I'm practicing to be a bad boy. Turns out, you know, that works all the time. Nice guy, yeah, doesn't work. I've tried it through, you know, from high school. Doesn't work, believe me. They're like, nice, yeah. Did I just give relationship advice? Relax, it's just it's not a one-size-fits-all. Now, the statement now of Africa shipping its raw material out of the continent and then expecting employment here. We produced it, I don't think you understand just how idiotic we are as a continent. We have the natural resources that we are putting upon ships and shipping it halfway across the world where they are processed. And that processing, those processing plants are employing thousands, if not millions of people. And then we go and buy finished products to sell here. What? And here's my favorite part. We load all the natural resources unprocessed and ship it outside of the continent. And then we tend to our people, and this is very common in African political sphere. And then we face our people with a very straight face and say, you know what? By 2030, we have 500,000 to a million jobs that we will create. I still have the same question here. How? Which is why everyone wants a government job. Why? Security. Even those ones that are high profile in the public, in public offices, are saying, you know what? Jobs are available. Dude, you are in public office. You know, now here's the thing. Just give me that job and go out there and look for one. Let's see what are the chances you'll get one. And for the elected officials, let's face it, you lied into getting yours. Now, I'm not blaming you on this one because if you have done a job interview, then you also lied into getting a job. Because, well, a job interview is just cooked up. So where do you see yourself in 5 years? Who am I, Bashiri? I don't know. I just want to get a job and get paid and, live life as the days go by. Thank you very much. So can I have the job, please? You have to tell them, you know, for you to get a job. This one thing I find fascinating about job interviews. Job interviews, especially the oral, I don't know why do we even use that as a vetting process? Like, that's the most obvious lie. Everyone knows this. The people interviewing you know you are lying. And, the reason why they are not pointing that out is they also attended interviews to get the jobs they have. So, technically, they lied into getting those jobs. So we had that point where, we also had to lie to get ours. So let's just let the guy lie. So, if he's successful, if he's good of a liar as we were when we were sitting in his position, then he will get the job. If he doesn't, then, better luck next time. What do you do, how do you handle stressful situation? And they're like, that's the biggest lie we all tell in job interviews. boss, just trying to make a point here. What do you do in stressful situation? When I'm in a stressful situation, I like to, I've developed this meditation technique so that I can calm myself down, so that I can focus clearly, because I believe that a clear mind can solve a problem much quicker than when you panic. Really? Dude, every time that you have a pressureful, a stressful situation, you run to Namib Breweries. Now, you can't point that out in the job interview, because you can't just say, well, every time I'm going through crappy situations, every time I'm facing a, a stressful situations, I just walk in a Namib Breweries and get 1, 3, 4, 50. We are not getting that job. You have to lie. But let's face it, the truth is the 3, 4, 50. But if you told that, you wouldn't get the job. I like human behavior. That's why I like to point that out. Because you're like beating around the bush, like it doesn't. It does. So, point. Word of advice: don't use. Don't tell the truth in the interview. Lie, you'll get the job. So the truth shall set you free. Well, look. The guy who told us that got nailed to the cross. That's the point I'm trying to make. We are so going to hell. Moving on. There's just one point here that Paul Mashatile made in in terms of the whole interconnectedness. The African continent's continental free trade area gives Africa an opportunity to change this, internal trade relations, like boosting them up. Therefore, building regional value chains, expand inter-Africa trade, and industrialize at scale. Its success, the success of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, depends on improved cross-border infrastructure, reduced trade barriers, aligned standards. Oh no, boy, do we have a lot of things to say on that. Aligned standards. You have a cross-border. Yeah, you have improved cross-border infrastructure, reduced trade barrier, aligned standards, and strong support for African businesses. Yeah, that's where I'm going to pause with Paul Mashatile. The last two points that he made. The success of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area depends on cross-border infrastructure. That's one. And reduced trade barrier, not going to focus much on that one. Aligned standards, that too. So infrastructure, revamping up the physical infrastructure, and throw in the digital one, because everything is transitioning into the digital, the sphere of things as of late. Now, through platforms such as the Continental Free Trade Area, we are going to position ourselves as a continent of an execution hub, a place where the African continent, the African Continental Free Trade Areas, move from agreement to implementation. Yeah, right. It'll be very difficult to sell me on the idea of employment creation and physical infrastructure development and Africa's overall economic development without its golden, whether you believe in evolution or creation, that's beside the point. The point is, the African continent was given a golden spoon, and that's its rich natural resources. Speaking of which, Gauteng is the home of, Joburg. And Joburg is Gauteng is basically a region that was a global dominant gold mining capital of the world for a very long time. But we're still talking about development for now. I know that, it was just exploited by multinationals, that were in bed with the apartheid South African government. That was then ran up until 1994. And fast forward to after 1994, following the Democratic dispensation, what came after that was it's just a series of preventable mismanagement. And that's not just in South Africa; that's the world over. Well, Helmut and Dwight here on Home Run, for those of you that are regular listeners, just recently went through the Fisheries Observer Fund, coming out of the Observer Fund report coming out of the Office of the Auditor General. What did we discover? Well, the Fisheries Observer Fund, not only did they provide inadequate information for the Auditor General's office guys to do to compile a proper report, but they provided mixed up information. Now, this is a Fisheries Observer Fund. This is in our fishing industry. This is an industry that's still trying to do damage control in terms of reputation restoration from the fishery scandal. And you already have questionable information. Like, really? Seriously? Let's take a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oije mwili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. We have 23 minutes left to the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight in absentia here on Eagle FM. Thank you for tuning in. And if you just tuned in, we are talking about the recently held Gauteng investment conference that took place in, of course, Gauteng, South Africa, where they looked at, and Gauteng is the smallest province by land mass in South Africa, but it's a very important economic hub for not just for South Africa but for the entire African continent. So with that in mind, I want you to look at just how important that particular region is. But let's come back to Paul Mashatile's point of let's do ourselves a favor. Let's do ourselves a favor and support African businesses. When Dangote opened his refinery, he was butting heads with the Nigerian government, which went public really fast, which I actually had a problem wrapping my mind around. I'm like, okay, what on earth is going on here? Let me give you an example of why I found that particularly shocking, and there is not any other way of describing it except dumb on the parts of the Nigerian government. Let me just now, before you start, well, basically ranting and throwing a fit, let me just point out how Western countries operate in terms of protecting their private companies. Zambia's deadline to sign the America First Global Health Strategy was today. Zambia was given until today to sign the America First Global Health Strategy so that they can get billions of dollars over a period of 5 years for a lot of diseases that is very common globally, and also Zambia is not exception, which includes HIV and AIDS. So that means, now, one of the reasons why Zambia was dragging its, why the Zambian government was dragging its feet in terms of signing that agreement is because it came with a very clear condition that, we are going to give you this money for you to take care of, your people that, that needs, HIV medication, but we will need something in return. We will need, any insanely high level of access to your natural resources. So the Zambian government said no. And they were told, okay, fine. Save your resources and watch your people die, or give us access to your resources and save your people. Now, why, for the love of God, as a continent, are we finding ourselves in a conundrum like that decades after independence? Why that is, I have no idea. Now, what I'm looking forward to is the Zambian government's response to that. Are they going to go the Ghanaian way of, yeah. Now, one thing I find interesting is that, of all the, you know, of all the leaders, the African nations leaders that decided not to, that basically, either in part or in whole rejected the America First Global Health Strategy, a lot of them were citing the data security concern. Zambia, on the other hand, the main concern was like, that is a lot of access to our resources, so no. Now, here's the thing. A few weeks ago, just in the early days of the, you know, of the war between the US, Israel, and Iran, one African TikToker made a video asking one very simple question, that if one African continent finds itself in a situation that Iran is today, how many of you can defend yourselves militarily the way that Iran is doing from any world bully? Short answer, none. And, Zambia is caught in between a rock and a hard place because of HIV medication. One. Not a single bullet. Just one. One condition. HIV, you know, we will give you HIV medication. We have access to your resources. Now, last time I checked, the American government does not, the American government as a public entity does not dominate the tech or the pharmaceutical industry that's being represented in this America First Global Health Strategy. Much of the beneficiaries that would come out of this data gathering, that data gathering and medicine that's being poured on the African continent, HIV, polio, because those are the two things that are basically heavily emphasized in the America First Global Health Strategy, which was made public late last year by the Trump administration. Now, one thing that you see is that that document represents pharmaceutical industries, which are mostly private companies coming out of the US, and represents also tech companies, which is where the natural resources part comes in, because Zambia is very copper rich. I mean, they have a region called the Copper Belt, and that electric car companies, electronic manufacturers need copper. If you are going to build electric components, your electric wiring, you need a lot of it. And Zambia has a lot of it. So what you are seeing here, with irrespective of what your take on the Trump administration is, I don't care. But what you're seeing here is, a forefront representation of a government, in a very boring way, representing its private sector. And last year, Joe Biden was in Angola in the name of the Lobito Corridor Group. That is a privately funded one. If you just follow the money and you'll find a lot of private players coming out of the EU and the US. Once again, you see nations leaders representing the interest of their country's private sector abroad. And that's the part now that made me not understand the Nigerian government when they went head to head with Dangote after he opened his refinery. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm not economic or petroleum expert, but I don't get it. Because one thing I know about Western countries is that wherever their private companies show up, they are there. What's the first thing that Donald Trump did after toppling Venezuela, the Venezuelan government? He rounded up private oil executives. So, again, on that point, Omar Shatile is spot on. African governments do not know how to support African businesses. And these are the people that are telling you, we will create employment. How? Let's go now. Now, according to DW, this is from the 10th of April. Zambia is the US trading HIV treatment for resources. That's DW News. That's German. The US is reportedly leveraging health aid to gain access to Zambia's critical minerals. Now, you have to understand that the America First Global Health Strategy replaced PEPFAR. These things, the America First Global Health Strategy emerged after, PEPFAR and USAID were basically given a very giant kick in the behind, out of operation. Now, you can say whatever you want to say about the US on this one, but you have to understand it's their money. Like, come up with yours. If you want to do things your way, come up with yours. There's an excellent expression. If you want a job well done, do it yourself. Amazing. So, the US is reportedly leveraging, now this is from the 10th of April, just to put that in mind. I'm just waiting for the Zambian government's response in relation to the deadline of the 30th that the Trump administration gave them, when they said, you know what, that's a lot of access to our resources, we're not giving you that. And the interesting thing is, Rwanda and Uganda just I think Lesotho also, and Djibouti, I believe, among a host of other countries, they were just signing without reading, I believe. They were just signing. Where do I sign? If you want to understand how and why we were colonized, look further than that. When it comes to access, there is one part that the Europeans have perfected that barely make headlines in terms of reach, in terms of geopolitical influence. If you want to understand who is controlling what, look at the people at the top of every African government and find out who is married to who in which country. I know, but this is something that I find interestingly confusing when people don't really look at it as much that, like, it's an important thing. Oh, it is. When World War II started, the Tsar of Russia, the Kaiser of German, and I believe is it the King or Prince of is it Prince of Denmark and England or the UK here? Those guys were cousins, thanks to Queen Victoria. They were related. So one thing that you find a lot in a lot of monarchs is that they use marriage a lot to cement political relations. And that have not changed by one bit. Which is why, wherever you find yourself, look at your country's leaders, especially those ones that are in key areas like your executive office and your natural resources, control. Find out who is married to who. And you'll understand who is controlling what. You gotta love the internet at this point. Makes the information public. Very public. Marriage has been used for a very long time to cement political relationship. Is the oldest part of diplomacy. Marry each other. So you both have something to lose. So you both have common interest. And no one will betray the other. Easy. You want to know who's controlling what? Just find out who is married to who. Just don't be creepy. I wouldn't recommend doing it when you're single because now you'll be looking for opportunities. And I won't blame you if you're looking for opportunities. But back to the whole Zambia discussion. Let me walk you through the 10th of April DW news article on Zambia. Basically, a deadline that the Trump administration gave Zambia, and the deadline is today. The U.S. is reportedly leveraging health aid to gain access to Zambia's critical minerals. Millions depends on U.S. funding for HIV, tuberculosis, malaria, and malaria treatment. Yet Zambia is hesitant to agree, and who wouldn't? More than 1 million people in Zambia are living with HIV, and one of several African countries where the United States President Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR program, has been a cornerstone for the financing of life-saving medical treatment for more than two decades. During this time, Zambia has made significant progress in battling the disease with new infections dropping from 63,000 to 30,000 between 2010 and 2025, according to the United Nations. That's according to the UN. But the Southern African nation is reportedly reluctant to sign a new deal with the US, which ties this critical lifeline to demand greater access to its critical minerals. Look, one thing I like doing in comedy, I don't like doing in seriousness, is pointing out the obvious. Ironically, I really like that. I like doing that in comedy. Now, back in March, the New York Times reported that it obtained a memo prepared for Secretary of State Marco Rubio, which outlined how the U.S. could withdraw health support on a massive scale to force Zambia and other countries to accept U.S. terms. Now at this point, you understand why the U.S.-Iran negotiations are not reaching any, reasonable solution. Because if you have an upper hand in negotiations, that's how you negotiate. Now, that's not a negotiation. That's not a negotiation. That's an or else. At this point, it's safe for at least me to assume that this is the type of negotiation going on between the U.S. and Iran. Or else type of negotiations. And when you say no, first of all, I won't give you the money. And now, in one of the, I think, yeah, one of the Al Jazeera TikTok videos that was uploaded on this, someone in the comment section asked, okay, now why not just use the natural resources to buy the meds from other suppliers? When someone is feeding you and you are seated on a couch, are you not just curious to ask yourself, what's in it for them? Because for a very long time, African countries were reluctant, African countries were dependent on just eating and eating and eating. It was handout after handout after handouts after handouts. And now those handouts have basically made us docile in terms of industrialization. And because of that lack of industrialization, we are being strong-armed into handing over our resources or watch our people die. Welcome to the world of geopolitics. And by the way, those are the guys that will come to you and start telling you about human rights. You know, they are threatening you with human rights, but they will still come and lecture you on human rights. The biggest problem is people don't like politics, so they don't do a lot of comparison, at least not on the crazy stage that at least Helmut and Dwight do, because boy, do we do that on a crazy scale, like crazy scale. Oh no, what we do here is just the tip of the iceberg. You should meet us offline. Ooh, just bring food. You know, we'll talk your ears off. So, yeah. What do you do now? You are kind of Shalima now. What do you do? You are looking at years of administrations that have come and go, that have not invested in pharmaceutical research and development and thus pharmaceutical industries that are locally based to be able to produce the medicine. Now we are being used, and now that lack of investment is being used against you. What do you do? Now, you are a Zambian citizen right now. What would you do? It's a fascinating question to ask you. So, for those of you that want to be career politicians, let me just help you with one thing. International law, like the Canadian Prime Minister pointed out during the World Economic Forum, pointed out at the World Economic Forum in Davos that international law will only protect you to some degree. Outside of that, well, there's nothing much international law can help. If international law was as effective, and that's my favorite branch of law, and I love international relations. And now I'm just here, just sitting in this wonderful southwestern African country, watching my favorite branch of law being trembled left, right, and center. And actually, it's been trembled ever since its compilation in the 1940s. What's going on in Gaza is against international law. What's going on in Iran is between Iran, Israel, and the US is against international law. You have a lot of things that are against international law. And I know you watch mainstream media and they can't help but talk about, this is against international law. Yeah, we know it is. What are you going to do? Because any country with a strong army will ask you that question. I know it's against international law. What are you going to do? Some of the biggest warmongers I know are legal experts. The Obama administration bombed the heck out of Libya. Obama himself has an advanced degree in law. Constitutional law. The irony, is just something else. So, The question to ask yourself, if you want to venture in the direction of career politics is, when someone is giving you something for free, ask yourself, what's the catch? Because I believe a lot of African countries were given a lot of aids, not the disease, aid as in assistant, as in assistance, for a very long time that we became dependent on that aid. To the point where right now, we are just realizing what a giant mistake we have done. That dependency is being turned into colonialism 2.0. Congratulations. We're idiots.
At ShopRite, we've got everything you need for baby and more at the lowest prices. Save big on baby essentials like 36, 42, 45, 50, 58 or 68 Pampers disposable nappies for only 209 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And Jolly Tots baby walker, all variants for only 299 Namibian dollars 99 each. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save big on deals for baby. Only available until 3 May 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust always.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Just a minute past the hour of five. We continue with today's home run. That's with Helmut and Dwight in absentia. That's what they say in your courts when they are, you know, prosecuting someone who is not there. He was tried in absentia. That's usually for war crimes or some president who spent decades prosecuting, more like making his own people disappear. So, let's continue. When I say developed countries, and I'm talking about Western countries here, it's amazing how they back up their private sector. It's amazing how they back up their private sector. There's this Belgian, there's this Belgian company that is has an interesting history. Also, has made significant investments in terms of green hydrogen, of Namibia's green hydrogen initiatives here in Namibia. Well, guess what? The Belgian head of state was here to represent that entity. Joe Biden was in Angola to represent that entity. Every time we find ourselves in Europe is because we are either on vacation, or we are attending an event we are invited to, or we are attending a funeral of Queen Elizabeth where we are shoved on a bus. Like we are not we rarely basically push the boundaries of representing our, you know, our private, you know, our private interest, or more like our private company's interest abroad. Every single war that you can mention was gone to, was pushed and, you know, was promoted and pushed by a government to represent private interest. I'm not saying let's become warmongers. I'm just pointing to you how far Western countries are willing to go to protect their country's interest, especially private sector interest, because the pharmaceutical industry that will benefit from the data that made you know, that made Ghana and Zimbabwe go, ah, heck no, we're not signing that. The pharmaceutical industry, that data would be benefiting would be private companies in the US. And if Zambia signs on this, the companies that will be benefiting from the natural resources extreme access of Zambia would be private companies. So in other words, you have a strong arm, you have basically strong arming of one political sphere, you know, one president over one government over the other. The US basically is a strong arming Zambia on this one. We'll be just telling them. And look, I can't blame the US on this one. If I'm going to give you billions, even if I was to give you billions, I would need something in return. Now, for the love of God, every time we go chilling and you buy a beer for a girl, you want to sleep with her. And you think someone will give you a billion for free. Thank God Dwight is not here. Now, the thing is, if you want to take off the clothes of someone you just bought KFC for, what makes you think someone will hand you $1 billion for free? But for some reason, that's the thinking capacity on the African continent. Someone can invest millions or billions in my country and not ask for anything in return. Are you that naive? Now, the only way to believe that, the only way you can believe that as an adult, it's either you need to be in Ward 16 here in Namibia, or the last place you should be in is public office running a country. Now, I know it's very easy for, you know, for those of us that are ordinary citizens to look at state leaders and go like, you know what, I can do that better. Yeah, right. You have a kid, you don't want to acknowledge that is yours. You're failing to take care of one kid. What makes you think you're going to run a country? You ran away from one kid. But for somehow, every time you put on a suit and you are given a microphone and stand on a podium, you think you can take care of a country. Oh, come on, man, seriously. But when you bring our collective minds full of, you know, English and verbosity, like, we should be doing things way better. Like, way better, if you ask me. Now, on the representatives, and, there's one part. There's one part that that I find interesting. That, do we read agreements as a continent? Like, do we? Or we just, you know, just sign left, right, and center? Sign. Just sign anyway. Do we? Because the point I'm about to make next is based on African countries that said no to the America First Global Health Strategy, citing data security concerns. Like, actually, those guys, I give them a heads off, you know, heads off. Why? Because that data security concern, I'm pretty sure there are maybe there are some fine prints pointing to the data security concern in the final agreements that could be wildly different from the America First Global Health Strategy. But here's one thing that that document says, and in terms of data, on page 8 of the 2025 America First Global Health Strategy, this is what it says: significant efficiency and waste. Oh boy! Now, first they start by cooking pepper, and this is not me cooking pepper. This is basically PEPFAR cooking PEPFAR, because PEPFAR is supposedly to stand for, what's that? Is a president, hang on a second, when I find that, yeah, President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. U.S. President's Emergency Plan. President's Emergency Plan, PEPFAR. So, well, right now, that president is Donald Trump. And he was like, you know what, On second thought, PEFA goodbye. America first global health strategy. Oh yeah. Komiso. That's as far as my Afrikaans can go, by the way. So, what does the successor of PEPFAR, aka America First Health Strategy, Global Health Strategy, say about data, aka informação? That's legitimate, you know, Portuguese, right? Because if it's no. Okay, you know what? Yeah, okay, forget all that. Let's go to page 15. Ooh, my favorite is page 15. The United States has historically invested in laboratory capacity and data systems across multiple global health initiatives. Let me repeat that statement. There's a key word there. The conference that was held in Gauteng was a Gauteng investment conference. And this statement says the United States has historically invested. Has historically invested in laboratory capacity and data systems across global health systems. We will now consolidate. Yeah. I think that's the part that the Zimbabweans looked at and went like, oh, hell no. We will now consolidate these investments into single surveillance data and laboratory investment strategy that can serve all aspects of our global health strategy in a country, including outbreak surveillance, HIV, AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, and polio. We will also consolidate. Just the word consolidate is more often used in power consolidation, political jargon, but which is why I found it very interesting in this part of the document. We will also consolidate data exchange as appropriate with countries both to monitor potential outbreaks as well as manage our health foreign assistance programs. So in other words, just give us the information. It's for our mutual benefit. Zimbabwe was like, right, mutual benefit, my behind. Rwanda was like, okay, fine, where do I sign? And Djibouti and Lesotho were like, and Uganda were like, where do I sign? Okay, fine. They didn't hide it. They were like, we are going to need access to information. Again, I will just ask this very simple question for the millionth time. Every time that you give someone food, every time that you buy for someone a bottle of beer, you want something from them. Every time you buy for someone pizza, KFC, you name it, you want something from them. What makes you think someone is going to hand you over billions for free? Let's just leave the, neocolonialism discussion. Just leave it out. Just use your thinking capacity on this one. Would you hand over billions of dollars for free? Sorry. Would you give someone $100 for free? Namibian. Not US. Namibian. Would you? A point of food. Would you give someone $10 for free? Sorry. $1. Who am I kidding? 50 cents for free. Would you? Now, if the answer is no, which is more often than not, what makes you think someone is going to give you, again, for the love of God, billions of dollars without expecting anything in return? Like the fact that this is being, portrayed as surprising. Like, really? It's either I'm a genius at pattern recognition, or people are really ignorant at trying to understand how society works. Not dumb. No, just being ignorant. So, let's turn the bus from that very wonderful extended explanation of why I admire Western countries when it comes to representing their, you know, when it comes to representing their, you know, their countries, you know, when it comes to representing their country's private sectors. One Polish arms dealer, yes, I also quote arms dealers. One Polish arms dealer, speaking to Andrew Feinstein in the documentary Shadow World, the world of a global arms deal, he said that, he basically said that politicians have the same level as executive offices, you know, executive representatives in private, you know, in private companies. At the end of the day, they do what they are told by shareholders of those private companies. Because just ask yourself one question. Again, if every time that you buy a beer for someone, you want to take your, you want to take their clothes off, and you find yourself in a place where you're a politician, what makes you think someone will fund your political campaign for free? Millions of dollars for you to go out there and lie with a straight face. Congratulations. Pulling that off, by the way. What makes you think, you know, they will not come and start asking for their return on investment? For, start asking for favors? We all ask for favors after doing a good deed for someone. No, we're just best friends. Right. Of course you are. That one likes me like a sister. Right. Of course he does. Of course he does. Like a sister, huh? Yep. It's like having a pet chicken. One day it's going to be middle of the month and you're going to miss KFC and pet chicken goes straight to the port. Now, this Gauteng investment... Gauteng Investment Conference, there's one thing, just when they reflected on what's happening, when they reflected on what's happening in terms of like the pledges that were made last in last year's Gauteng Investment Conference. At the beginning of the of this year's event, which was held at Marriott Hotel, Joburg. Look, we don't even hold, we don't even own the hotels we are hosting these conferences in. They are all private entities coming out of the Western world, who are very well, sometimes very diabolically, used through military interventions, represented by their governments. I know that those guys, you know, those guys, especially the Nepal, you know, especially in the US, that's lobbying is legalized bribery. In other words, well, don't call it lobbying. You know, just call it bribery. They come to Namibia, they will learn that there's a thin line between lobbying and robbing. So it was pointed out in a reflection of the 2025 Gauteng Investment Conference that the inaugural 2025 conference secured approximately 312 billion in investment pledges, with at least 18 projects already progressing to implementation, according to media advisory. Here is another thing. Pledges of 312 billion. Like sometimes as voters, this is something that we should put in mind. Every time you read a story of a country or a private entity, quote unquote, donating billions, ask yourself one question, which is a very human question to ask yourself. You are not being, you are not being paranoid. You are just asking a very simple question. What's in it for them? Because we like to, you know, because we like to receive donations, and when we see that, well, someone is doing us without Vaseline, we start asking, oh, why is this happening? Well, didn't they just give you billions? if they did just give you billions, why do you think they were giving you the billions? Of all the countries, they would have given those billions. Why you? It's because you have copper, because you have gold, because you have diamonds. And one thing I like about Trump is that he's not covering up this whole thing in some rosy language of, we are just here to, you know, to help you because you are a developing country. No. They're like, well, we have the medicine, we have the money. Now, here's the thing. You give us the, you know, you give us the, you know, we give you the medicine, you give us the resources. This is very simple. This is business being misconstrued. But then, how do we understand? Now, I feel like we have lost the concept of trade because of receiving way too much handouts. Way too much. So billions received in investments. The 312 billion received in pledges. This is in Gauteng. It's actually a Gauteng, not a Gauteng, since it's one that literally translates to, is it if or when you are there, or something like that. There's also something that interesting that was pointed out by the the premier of the Gauteng province. The premier is South Africa is very huge by landmass, most. So instead of having regions, they have these provinces. So basically, look at a premier as the same level like your regional governor, if I have that. Now, I don't know if their premiers are like presidential appointees, like we have regional governors here, or they are just elected officials, which I think they do elected official, because the whole appointed by the president thing is just a... Really? Nah. That's way too much power. But, well, there's a piece of legislation that enables it, not just the appointments, but also the assistance, I believe, of those chiefs, okay, of those governors. The premier of Gauteng province, that's Panyaza Lesufi, indicated the need for, again, infrastructure and skills development, as industrialization is not possible without them. You need to invest in infrastructure, and you need to invest in skills development. Basically, that's a very long way of saying we need to invest more in research and development. And I'm saying that because of the point that he makes after that, which I think, it's a somewhat comical and very, also very true statement. And I have it word for word here. The reason he pointed out for the need to invest in skill and infrastructure, especially skills, is that, a Stone Age, and I quote, Stone Age didn't end because that generation ran out of stones. Stone Age ended because new ideas were planted. We have to be the hub of new ideas. Man, the man was spitting facts. The Stone Age did not end because that generation ran out of stones. They figured out a new and effective way. They had to experiment with different tools. And now we are melting metals to make, we are melting rocks to make metals. That's a heck of an upgrade. And now we are talking about digital technology. We have digital technology. That's a giant leap. Now, this circles us to day one, to, again, it's just one obvious statement after another. Research and development is not something that we are very strong at as a continent. Not just South Africa, the whole continent. To come up with new ideas, you need to think outside the box. You need to think beyond borrowing or just accessing ideas that are already, well, refined by somebody else. Because, look, the good thing is you can access those ideas, which is where this is where international relations, foreign relations now comes in. But only if those people are willing to give you the idea. And more often, those ideas don't come cheap, even if you are given access to those ideas. And most of them are proprietary ideas, and they are very heavily guarded. Like, take the one Dutch company. You know, one Dutch company that makes the, is it the lithography machine? ASML, HTMC uses those machines. HTMC is a chip making company that's based in Taiwan that produces what? Like about 60-80% of, of computer chips used in your phone, laptop, cars, you name it. But the machine used to print the very, very precision requirement. Precision required of a computer chip to operate. Those machines are made by only one company based in the Netherlands. One. Can you imagine the hoops you will have to jump through to have access to that technology? And you know who is killing it in research and development? China. China is light years ahead in research and development. China is light years ahead in research and development, especially in tech. And they don't dominate the supply chain of all kinds of minerals by accident. This is where we should now choose, redefine the word miracle. Now, imagine if the entire 1.4 billion Chinese citizens were to just gather in church once a week and pray their tears out for them to build the economic capabilities they have today. Would they have achieved that? But for, absolutely not. But for some reason, we have an entire continent of just around the same population that thinks, you know what? Prayer can substitute implementation. Yeah, right. Now, Asia is very industrialized, tech-wise. And skills-wise, also. Skills in tech, manufacturing in tech. Asia is dominating that sphere. And some of the most religious people you'll meet on this planet are Asians. Not Christians, but you'll find some degree of Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists. They believe in the higher power, but they know when to pray and when to work. Africans want to leave everything to prayer. Whatever it is that we are smoking, we should really, really dial it down. Really, really dial it down. When you read the history of industrialization, one thing you read is countries had to go research and development, skills development, technical skills, skills development, research and development, high institutions. And then we came to South Africa. We decided to flip the script. We're like, you know what? We are going to start with high institutions and then we'll just build skills as we go along. Then we realized that we don't have industries to absorb the, we are producing, graduates, but we don't have, the institutions to absorb them in terms of employment. And we are all shocked, by the way. How did this happen? Oh, really? You didn't know that you first have to build industries? Point of correction. There's one South African gentleman that made excellent sense on that one. He does a lot of, political thinking outside the box. That's what I call it. His point was, the way that countries like Vietnam and Cambodia went through it, especially Vietnam was, they started with technical institutions. Based on those technical institutions, they build up a skills base. From that skills base, research and development, then universities.
This Mother's Day, ShopRite is here to help you celebrate every mom in your life. With our low prices on thoughtful gifts and delicious treats, it's never been easier to make her feel truly special. Spoil mom with deals like 400 grams Happiness Fine Pralines chocolate assortment for only $89.99 and 400 mils Nivea body lotion or cream, all variants, which is $54.99 each. Or simply give the gift of choice with a ShopRite gift card, valid until 10 May 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. So, the argument the gentleman I just referenced earlier before the break was, the argument he makes is one of, okay, you know what? What if we have this whole development things backwards? Because countries, there were a lot of countries, those ones that have achieved the level of economic development we can only dream of right now, industrialization development we can only dream of right now, is they first started with setting up small industries and then build up practical skills. Based on those skills, they had technical institutions. Those technical institutions helped basically better those skills, and then those skills were then applied to the industries which were set up. So they had they first had to set up industries. So okay, you know what? These are the industries that we are strong, and depending on the strength and the weakness assessment that we have done, this is what we are good at. This is what can be sold or can be processed in this region. So what we are going to do is we are going to build our skills based on this industry. So they build their skills and then they set up industries. And then they build technical institutions that fed those industries with skills. And those technical institutions those industries invested the money into the country because the money is moving us. So those technical institutions were elevated to the level of, those technical institutions started doing better ways to make better ways to do the job. That's your research and development, the beginning basically of research and development. The better way to do the job betters the skills and betters industries and elevates the technical institutions to the level of universities. that's where academia comes in. That's when you now start producing people with PhDs. And boy, did we start with people with PhDs. So we started with, you know what, let's start with the universities, shall we? So we started with the universities. And then we started, you know what courses are we going to offer? Right, what courses are offered in European universities? We copied and pasted. What courses are offered in American universities? We copied and pasted on like, right. So now we have universities and we have, we speak fancy English. So what are these students supposed to do again after they leave this university? Work? Where? We didn't set up industries that, and then tailor our university based on the skills requirement from those industries. Darn it! What do we do? Oh, yeah, 35 plus years after that. What did we do? Basically, that's the whole African, that's a continental problem. That's why there are more people with advanced degrees. There are more Africans with advanced degrees outside of Africa than there are within Africa. Because we gave people PhDs without, creating the environment they are going to work after they get that PhD. Well, guess what they do? They hop on a plane and straight to Berlin. That's awfully specific. Professor Disha is going to be calling me after this. Oh, we have a live read, but after the break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. 23 minutes left to the hour of 6. This is Home Run with Hemd and Dwight in absentia here on Eagle FM, wherever you tuned in from. Thank you for tuning in. But before we continue, let's take a live read. Vilvicha University 2026 July applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. Admission requirements have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institutions. Must be a registered nurse/midwife with a Nursing Council of Namibia HPCNA. Minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse/midwife in any health facility. Must write a short essay describing the motivation of pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration, 1 year. Mode of delivery, full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. So, we meet. Okay, point of correction. There are gatherings that takes place every year. Gatherings takes place every year where the subject being heard is, investment. on the African continent. Basically, overall African economic growth, or each of African country's economic growth. The question that almost always pops up, or the point that's always referenced, is that we need physical infrastructure for us to trade. But I think even when they point that out, they're jumping the broom. The question we should start asking ourselves is, yes, we want to trade with each other. What do we produce that we can trade with each other? What does Namibia produce that they can sell to South Africa? What does Namibia, South Africa produce that they can sell to Namibia? What, and mostly, also bringing the affordability component. This is why, if you look at it from the affordability, component, you are just going to come to the painful realization of how difficult the implementation of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area is. Because you are talking about telling a private sector operator that they must, you're talking about telling a commercial farmer in Namibia. One thing that was pointed out by the February NSA, Namibia's trade statistics, is that the Norwegians bought a lot of our meat in February. Namibia's meat, they bought a lot of it. Now, Norway is part of the EU. It's in Europe. Think about the currency they use, and think about the level of development Norway is and their buying power. Which African country has that, for the love of God? And now, imagine just you yourself. Don't picture anyone in the position of a commercial farmer, of a commercial beef farmer. Yourself, you are the beef farmer. Your government comes to you and tells you that, you know what, we realized from the recent NSA statistics that you sold a lot of your meat to the Norwegians. Yeah, so we want to implement the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Now, what we're going to do is we want you to change that market from Norway to Botswana. In other words, change it from euro to pula. Or change it from, switch it from Norway to Namibia. Or, just sell local, man. We want to grow the local industry. Let's be honest. Are you going to listen to that person? Are you going to listen until they finish their statement before you punch them in the face? Or are you going to punch them in the face before they finish their statement? Or you're just going to shoot them on the spot? Because I know what I would do. There is not a single rational business individual that will toss aside a business like, a market like Norway for a market that is less than that in terms of buying power, and currency strength, especially the buying power part. Like, which African country has the buying power of Norway? I'm pointing that out because if there was one, I'm pretty sure we would have sold them that. The Zambians bought a lot of, a lot of it. Did the Zambians buy a lot of our meat or a lot of our fish? One of these two. But apart from, second in terms of beef consumption, second from the Norwegians came the South Africans. Now, just ask you, you are a commercial farmer, your government comes to you and tells you, we want to build, we want to kickstart the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Now, what we want is you to divert your market from a very established long history of strong and consistent buying to, let's give it a shot, type of market. Oh, come on. There is not a single commercial farmer that will listen to you. I wouldn't listen to you if I was a commercial farmer. If you came to me with that, with that proposal, unless you are giving me a lot of incentives in return, unless you are giving me a guarantee for my losses, and that have got to be one heck of a guarantee. And when you are looking at government guarantees in terms of bailouts for the private sector. Yeah, that's not going to be easy. And I feel like I'm promoting 2008 financial crisis here, because the problem with the private sector is if you empower them to the point where you are bailing them out every time that they screw up, you end up with a 2008 financial crisis, which is one is brewing right now, because the idiots that caused the 2008 financial crisis were not held accountable. In fact, they were bailed out. They literally gambled global economy and ended up with they brought about a global economic catastrophe. And they were not punished. They were bailed out. If every time that a kid does something dumb, you give them a sweet, guess what you should be saving up for? Bail money. Because that's where it's headed. You have to figure out ways of reprimanding them somehow. But coming back to the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, for us to start talking about trading on a continental level, I think by starting the discussion with the infrastructure, we are missing out the key point. The point that I believe we missed as a country, Namibia, back in 2011, and that's why the Peugeot assembly plant went down under. We didn't start from the selling part. Before we are going to say we want to produce something in terms of industrialization, what is it that we want to produce, and who is the consumer? Because with that, you are going to establish who your market is or where your market is. So we brought in the French. I don't even know why the French were also dumb enough to fall for that, but for some reason they did. Maybe someone went there with a French accent or like, I mean, he speaks French. So, well, he's one of us, so we must believe him. From the beginning of the Peugeot plant, if you basically read the story of, because, 2011, I was just trying to survive high school. I didn't know a lot of those things were going on. So when you look at it, the first thing that you see is that from the get-go, if you look at it from Robin Chevron's the Introduction to the Namibian Economy, I keep mixing up the title of that book, is we were working on a lot of information not based on call it market analysis. We're working more on trust me, bro, or more like just let's cross our fingers and pray to our ancestors and hope it works. And unfortunately, the economy doesn't work like that. The economy works on numbers, not Mlima Tuse. If you are in Zambezi, you understand that better. And if you don't, then get yourself a Zambezian friend; they will understand. The problem is, whether you call it miracles or Mlima Tuse, the economy doesn't work on Mlima Tuse. The economy works on thinking and doing the economic math and making future projections. Now, if you think we are not following, we are not following the right economic path, don't worry, it's not just us. Don't worry, it's not just us. In 2000, a banker in the private sector published a piece of a very revolutionary economic trajectory document in the history of the 21st century, in my opinion. He told Western governments, look, I'm an expert at this whole money movement thing. And one thing I can tell you is that you must start now making friends out of China, Russia, India, South Africa, and Brazil, especially China, Russia, and India. Make friends out of this, because that's where the economy is headed. Well, this was in the 2000s. Bill Clinton didn't listen. Bush decided to invade Iraq instead of following that idea. Now, China is the enemy. Since when? All they had to do was follow Jim Olin's idea. Like, this is the problem. Politicians are trying to implement the economic ideas. An economist, basically, I'm not sure if he went by if he has the title of an economist, but he's been in the banking profession, so he knows how money moves around the world. I think that was with Goldman Sachs at the time. Is he still with Goldman Sachs? I have no clue. Now, told him the direction the economy is taking is headed the side of Asia, Russia, China and India, that's Asia. South Africa, throwing Brazil, or now what we know as BRICS. Actually, the whole acronym of BRICS can, the history of it can be traced back to 2000 from Jim O'Neill. Is it Jim or Jameson? Jim O'Neill. Yeah. Don't quote me on that. But this was an expert in the field that told them, this is the direction the economy is headed. It's like someone who live in the area telling you, if you want to go to the service station, follow that road. And you are like, yo, you know what? I don't believe you. I'm driving that way. Until you run out of fuel, then you're like, why didn't I go that way? Because now I'm very far from the service station. And then you start trash talking the owner of the service station. What they do? You didn't follow instructions. Now, for Africans, one thing that, the dependency component was created, and it can be argued that it was created, on purpose. If it was created by accident, then politicians on both sides of the spectrum are dumb. And I don't like to believe that there is such a thing as a dumb politician. One thing I've come to believe is that politicians are excellent actors. And one of the best character they take was acting to be dumb. They are very good at playing stupid. And like the excellent example right now is Donald Trump. You have no idea how many people believe that a man who is richer than them is dumber than they are. Like, really? How much money do you have in your bank account? Still waiting for my salary. Right. How much money does Donald Trump have? He's a billionaire. But for some reason, you are fully convinced you are smarter than him. Yes. Really? Huh. Look, infrastructure is step two of this discussion of, Africa's industrialization. Research and development. Skills development is step one. Now, I know that those two are actually intertwined because you need infrastructure for research and development. And research and development is not cheap. It's not. Africa's dependency on foreign products is the reason why Zambia is caught between a rock and a hard place. It's a very reason why it's very difficult for us to hold foreign multinationals, accountable, because we are heavily, heavily, heavily reliant on the products they produce. And that's on a very disturbing scale. I'll give you an example in the remaining seven minutes. In November of last year, an NGO in Switzerland wrote a very, 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 very colorful letter. To NESO. And I happen to have the letter. Well, it's public knowledge. It's on the internet. Don't worry. They wrote it to the CEO of NESL, which is headquartered in Avenue NESL 55, 1800 Vey Street, Switzerland. That's nice information. Nestle's double standard over added sugar in baby food. Dear Philip, is it Navratil? Why does that sound like a pharmaceutical product name? It does sound like that. We, the undersigned civil society, and a list of civil societies coming. So these are civil societies. The undersigned civil society, consumer protection and research organization from Africa are writing to express our deep concern regarding Nestle's double standard over added sugar in baby food sold in African countries. A new public eye investigation has revealed that this is a civil society organization or an NGO. Like the description between these two, I always mix things up. Oh, you don't say. Yeah, now, pardon me. A new public eye investigation has revealed that a Kellogg baby cereal sold in African countries contain high amounts of added sugar, while such products are sold with no added sugar in Switzerland, where the company is headquartered, and in key European markets. These findings come from an analysis of around 100 Kellogg products sold in 20 African countries, conducted by Innovalis, a leading French public laboratory specialist in agri-food sector. 90% of the products contained added sugar, nearly 6 grams per serving on average. Yeah, that explained the tantrums. In India, after the publication of a previous public eye investigation led to a major controversy over high sugar levels in Kellogg and Nestle, Nestle announced that it would replace its entire portfolio. But Nestle keeps adding high level of sugar to its most popular baby cereal brands sold in Africa. So that whole list basically goes on then to point to the World Health Organization guidelines recommend no added sugar in baby foods as exposure to sugar early in life can create a lifelong preference for sugar products and in major risk of factor for developing obesity. That's just a civil society organization quoting the World Health Organization standards in terms of baby food sugar requirements. And now the concerned groups are, League of Consumer Defense in Benin, Benin Health and Consumer Survival, Consumer Association of Burundi, Center for Research and Education for Development in Cameroon, Ivorian Consumer Association in Ivory Coast, Moroccan Society for Nutrition and Health and Environment in Morocco, Moroccan League for the Fight Against Diabetes, again, Morocco. There's one that is in French, that's in Mozambique. There's a Nutrition and Food Security Alliance of Namibia. Well, I don't have to tell you where that one is from. And Consumer Advocacy and Empowerment Foundation, that's Nigeria. Association for Defense of the Environment and Consumer, Senegal. And Groundwork Friends of the Earth, South Africa. And you have a Health Living Alliance again, South Africa. There's a whole list of from South Africa, Zimbabwe, Tunisia, Togo. These are civil societies standing up against a multinational corporation. As they're basically telling them, look, We don't have anything against you. We don't have anything against your products. Just remove the sugar. Civil society had to point that out on a continent full of governments. And you have the accountability problem. And that feeds into, that's emanating from, actually it is. I would argue it's emanating from a legislative problem, which becomes a governance issue. Right. So we have a food dependency, we have a tech dependency, we have an auto dependency, we have a textile dependency, we have, do we have dependency on everything. But hey, we will create employment. Really? Using whose industry? If by we will create employment, you mean we will make the economic situation at home so bad that you will become an immigrant in a country that is processing the resources we are shipping off in raw form, then sure, we are nailing employment creation like no man's business. I never actually looked at it like that. Actually, when you look at it like that, well, we are creating employment. Actually, that lack of more like backwards take on industrial growth is the reason why you have immigration problems. And those immigration problems are leading to issues like xenophobia in South Africa. Now that subject have always, have just popped up again. And every time it pops up, creates chaos. People's lives are lost. And the governments are like, you know what? Well, my son is doing, advanced mathematics at Harvard. And I can afford that because of the bribes I'm taking from a bunch of foreign multinational corporations. So I'm good. Just a minute past the hour of six, that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Just something to put in mind. So until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. While you're going on long weekend, I'm just gathering all the information to keep you company. And please, I've already seen pictures on social media of an accident circulating that is going to give me sleepless nights. I think I'm going to need a beer or two. It's... car accidents are ugly. You don't have to be in one. You just have to witness one. And we have witnessed... we witness that like every long weekend. Every weekend. Witness that. So, drive safe, watch the road. Don't drink and drive. And you are not Van Diesel. You are Mkoya. You are not Van Diesel. You are Shilongo. You are not Van Diesel. You are Dwight. The only, Afrikaans name I could think of. And thank God he's not here. Until tomorrow, you'll have a blessed evening. And please do stay tuned for Business with Roy. From yours truly, you'll have a good one.